Hi, I'm Diana Yokley. I'm a peaceful parenting coach and mom of three, and I'm delighted to give you the latest science-backed research on child development, parenting, and to support you in showing up as the parent that you want to be.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our podcast session today. I have here with me today a very special guest. I have here with me Sonali Vongchusiri. Hi, Sonali. Welcome.
Hi, Diana. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have you back. We've had some great conversations in the past. You know, your work on supporting strong-willed children and families that have strong-willed children is really powerful. It's made a huge impact in my own family with supporting our kids. And so I'm really excited about our conversation today. Today we're going to dive into, you know, when you as a parent find yourself thinking, you know, I just want my kid to be able to do what everybody else does, this kind of like belonging, sense of belonging and community, and how we as parents kind of want our kids to fit in to society and blend in. And then what happens when maybe our kids don't? And so I'm really excited because today you're going to share with our audience your personal story of how you've experienced similar circumstances and how you've really used it as a gift in supporting yourself and your family and raising your own kids, but also supporting parents in our community. So I'm excited to talk about that today.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe you can kind of kick it off with your own story of how you've had similar circumstances in your life and how that's led you to become a parenting advocate today.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, and so much of it, I think, is I realize more and more it's taking these experiences that I've had, and then I flipped them and brought them into the parenting space. I'll start with, well, what I say is I am your sensitivity needs and regulation go-to gal, and I happen to be legally blind and have albinism. And what I knew about that growing up was that I was like, okay, I'm legally blind. I'm visually impaired. I usually used visually impaired when I was younger. And I was like, that what that means is I have large print books, like these giant books, and I need this giant backpack in elementary school. And I had a special ed teacher that came once a week for about an hour to check in and make sure I had the things that I needed. And that I automatically, and this is awesome, Diana, I was always placed next to my bestie whenever they rearranged seats. Oh, wow. Because she would pass her notebook to me so I could copy her notes and then I would pass it back to her. You can imagine that turned into a great thing once we got into high school.
That's amazing.
and that's what I thought it meant to be visually impaired. And when I got home, I thought I was exactly the same as everybody else in my family. And other than that, and it stayed that way until I was 12. And on this particular day, that teacher came in, and she came in, I was sixth grade. So I think about like junior high, middle school kind of. And she came in after school that day. The classroom was empty. It was just me and her. And I still remember this. She's like, hey, I brought an article for you to read on your CCTV. And a CCTV was this machine that I used. I would put books that were regular print underneath of it. It would enlarge it on the screen so that I could read it. And so I was like, okay. And understand that I didn't like it when she came because she was proof that I was visually impaired. And I didn't want any proof that I was any different from anybody else. So so I took the article that she had and I put it on my CCTV and I turned it on and I started to read it. And I remember like my heart stopping and even talking about it now, I'm like, ooh, I can feel the body reaction. Like everything inside me starting to throb. It was an article about albinism. And she asked me, she's like, have you heard this word before? And I hadn't. That was the first time at 12 that I had learned about albinism. I was reading an article about somebody who has albinism like me, and I wasn't aware that I had albinism. And I think the especially interesting part of the story is that I'm a person of color with no color. So my family is of Indian origin. The rest of my family is brown, of my family of origin is brown hair, skin, and eyes. And then here I was, you know, very fair skinned and white hair. And it, and I didn't question it because it was my normal. Mm-hmm. And I remember going home and talking to my mom, well, talking, yeah. There was emotion there. And I was upset and she was upset that somebody else had told me. And then she pulled out a folder that she had been keeping about albinism. And it included like a pamphlet from an organization for people with albinism. It included like doctor's reports and things like that. And it included a biology report that my brother did. And I remember having this aha. I was like, wait a minute. The whole rest of the world knows this thing about me that I didn't know about me. And it was like in that moment, nothing changed in my world, yet everything changed. Mm-hmm. And so that was like that moment for me where I was like, oh, wait, I am not the same. Yet I didn't even realize that I knew something. I felt different inside and that felt wrong. And it was, I remember going to school the next day and all of a sudden it was like, I could hear the words on the playground that I hadn't heard before. It was like albino, whitey, Casper, witch, you know, like, and it was like, I was so dissociated from my own body, which is why I think a lot of my parenting approach is coming into your body and being able to like make it safe in this space. I was so dissociated from my body that I couldn't even hear those words. And so it was like this, it was this like all of a sudden I had this realization that that's what they were asking or that's what they were saying. And that's why. And that's why people would always ask, like, is she your sister? Is she really your sister? Okay, but she's got a different dad, right? And it wasn't questions directed to me. It was questions directed to my family members because, but right in front of me. So it was very much like I was visible yet invisible at the same time. And so these were my experiences. And I didn't, after that moment, it wasn't like I was like, oh, yippee, now I want to learn everything about having albinism. No,
yeah,
I was middle school. I shut down. I was very shy. I became almost overnight a straight A student because I had such a shattered sense of who I was. And it was, and I continued that way. And so I used to do things. I remember like fast forward, like I fast forward to, and I did everything that would challenge the norm, which I guess I still do. people with disabilities. So I have a master's in math. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And I remember going for job interviews and saying, oh yeah, I'm visually impaired and I have albinism. All that means is, oh, I need this machine to help me magnify things. But other than that, everything's exactly the same. I can do everything. And I think that's where, like, tying back into that message, I was a big fan, probably the president of I Can Do Everything You Can Do, of that club. And the thing that I didn't realize was the silent costs and the not so silent costs. Like, I would stay up till 3 a.m. trying to complete the same work that my sighted colleagues were doing. And, you know, and I was doing great work. I was excelling at my career, but inside I was a giant ball of stress and anxiety and worry. And I was constantly living in that state. And I didn't have the awareness as to why. Because while I had the language now, oh, okay, and I'm legally blind and have albinism, I didn't have the awareness to what that meant in terms of my needs. And I was pretty firmly committed to, I am exactly the same and I can do everything exactly the same as everybody else. And I think that's why what you said at the beginning is so important to me, because I think now what I've come to is, and this is kind of a challenging thing, because I think we as parents, we're like, oh, I want my kids to be able to do everything the same as their peers, whether they're highly sensitive or neurodivergent in some way, we just want them to be able to function the same as their peers. And what I hear in that when a parent says that, and my hand is raised because I'm like, oh, my kids do those things with everybody else, so I'm guilty here too. It's that desire for our kids to know that they belong.
Yeah.
That desire for our kids to have a good life. Oh, if they do everything the same, what I'm hearing is, I want my child to have a good life. And it has been so fascinating for me. And I know we haven't talked about this yet, but for me, my good life came when I started to liberate myself from thinking I needed to do things the same as everybody else. And like that to me, like when that flipped, that like given this is my capacity, this is where I am, this is what I can and can't do, well, how do I have my good life? And so I hope
Oh, I
that
love that.
I hope
yeah,
that
I love that. And as you're talking through like this desire to belong, and we want our kids to belong as parents, you know, it kind of makes me think of kind of this is a innate mammal, like survival strategy, right? Like this belonging to the group is what keeps us surviving, because we have a greater chance to fight off predators. Because if we're different, we're at risk for, you know, threat. And so our parents work really hard to make sure we fit in as much as possible to save their little offspring, right? And then we get this message that there is a threat of being excluded. And so how do you think, like, you know, for example, like with your mother and for parents listening, like, how can parents still send the message that you actually still belong? You actually still belong to this family at minimum, even if you don't look like your peer group, because something is different about you, you know?
Yeah.
Is it possible
and
to have
it may
both
not even be
in
looked.
one?
Like there, it might be, you know, you're neurodiverse, you're, you know, like you have ADHD, you're on the spectrum, you're highly sensitive, your family has been going through a divorce, like for whatever reason, that you may feel different than your peers, and that's okay. Like, in fact, that's really normal. Like, Dan, I think we all know what it's like to feel like we're on the outside looking in, or to feel like, oh, wait, why am I not having the same response as everybody else to this when I drop my kids off for an overnight stay? There are other parents that are like, oh, they're, you know, like, they're like, oh, I'm going to miss them so much. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to go get a coffee. You know, like, why am I having that response? And I think some of the things there come into, like, how can we make those places where we show up differently in the world? How can we say that, like, those things where we show up differently, with that's how we show up differently, but those are safe things, not things that need to be hidden so that you can belong about you. There are different things about all of us, and we all belong. And so it's something that I realized it when, well, when my oldest was born. I remember I had thought that that my kids would have their dad's pigmentation, because I'm like, oh, all my genes are recessive. I've got no pigment. They're going to come out looking like their dad in terms of pigmentation. And they didn't, my kids. And I now understand, it's taken me years to figure this out, that while I have albinism, I'm not a carrier for albinism. So my genetic pigmentation came through, like my family of origin pigmentation. So my kids were born with brown skin, hair, and eyes. And I remember being like, oh, I'm going to have to deal with this now, because now all of a sudden I've brought kids into, they are going to have the questions and the comments and the wondering, you know. And I knew, I was like, I don't want them to feel, to question their belonging. I know that this is where they belong. And so it has come through, and maybe sharing some of my experiences here, it has come through this like radical acknowledgement, approval. It's come through a lot of humor. And like, it's like any elephants that could possibly in the room, we talk about them, we acknowledge them, we have a good time with them. Like, we just love those elephants in the room and like own them. So, so my kids, like my, like, because that I've had those conversations with them, I'm like, oh yeah, you're brown and I'm white. And I would kind of do it sing-songy when they were younger. They'd be like, you're brown and I'm white. And I remember my daughter, when she was potty training, she was singing Let It Go on the toilet, which is hilarious. and she looks up at me and she's, you look like Elsa. And I was like, and I realized, I'm like, oh, this is my moment. She's talking about her color. And I'm like, this is my moment to shift the dialogue, that I'm not going to hide that we're different colors. We are. And I'm like, no, girl, Elsa looks like me. I came first. Elsa has albinism. And we laughed and we joked. And she's like, two. And then we kept having those conversations. And so, I've had those conversations with them, like, hey, you're brown and I'm white. And so she's had that. And they've had those experiences. Like, we've been in taxis where people say, oh, your son, your daughter, why not same? Why don't they look the same as you? And they've watched, we have a lot of those conversations about when we want to talk, when I want to talk about it, when I don't want to talk about it, how, you know, like, and that it's an okay thing for me to sometimes want to talk about it and sometimes not want to talk about it. Sometimes I just want to go get my morning coffee and I'm not ready yet, you know, and that's an okay thing. And other times, maybe the way that I was asked, it didn't feel so good. And there are other times where I'm like, oh, this person's really curious. And I'm like, hey, and I will have that conversation and I'll explain it. And we've had those conversations, and it's come through this process of trial and error, of being radically honest, like with that, your kids, why not same? I ignored it. I pretended they didn't say anything, because remember I told you that was my go-to pattern when I was a kid. It was like, just pretend it's not happening. It's not happening. And so I pretended like it didn't happen. And I remember getting out of the taxi, shutting the door, and my daughter was with me. And I was like, I realized, I'm like, wait a minute. They're watching me.
My hope is that the information that you receive on this podcast is supportive of your parenting. And if you find this information relevant, please gift this resource to other parents by sharing it with a friend, leaving a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts so that other parents can see this rated higher and can also benefit from this knowledge. And also want to remind you that this podcast is listener sponsored and is brought to you free of ads. That means that I bring you this information and the latest neuroscience on parenting and child development that's not sponsored by anyone but you. And if you'd like to support us staying on air, please consider upgrading to a paid Substack subscription for only 16 cents a day. With the paid subscription, you also receive free access to my amazing resource, which is a members-only monthly masterclass with Q&A. And this often involves other parenting experts that I've brought to the discussion at a fraction of the regular price for the public. And for my most loyal listeners on Substack and on this podcast, if you'd like to become a founding member with a $300 annual fee, you will receive a complimentary 1 hour private coaching session with me to support you in your parenting and put the delight back into raising your child. To learn more, please go to delightinparenting.substack.com.
Seeing how I respond to people noticing the differences. And so I turned to her and I was like, hey, did you notice that? I'm like, what do you think he was talking about? And he's like, oh, that your hair is white and my hair is brown. And I'm like, yep, you're right. And we had this whole conversation. I was like, it's so interesting. Like, and I'm like, I didn't want to talk about it. And I'm like, next time I can just say, yep, that's right. Or something else. And I'm like, but I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't like the way that I was asked that time. And there are many other times where I do. Like, I've gone into the kids' schools and we've had conversations about having a blind parent and what that's like for them. And they're like, oh, it's so, like, people turn around and look at me like, did that really happen? And they're like, yes, that really happens. And because, and so my kids are like, they stand a little bit taller and they're like, oh yeah, those things happen. And they don't even realize that some of the experiences that we have are unusual for their peers. The reason I'm sharing these stories is because what used to be disconnecting in the differences are now connecting because I'm not hiding it. I'm not pretending like it's not there. I don't feel like I've worked through. I was about to say, I don't feel shame about it. I'm actively working through my shame about it. I've worked through a lot. I'm always actively working through it. So I think these types of conversations, and when my kids have, like when my oldest, he's like, yeah, somebody asked me, you know, like, who is she when you came to pick me up? And I was like, my mom. And they're like, no, who is she really? And he's like, bruh, Google her. And like that he knows he belongs. His belonging is not up for question. So it's been fascinating for me. I'm like, they're in the same situation. Well, they don't have albinism and are legally blind, they are in the same situation because our difference is present. It is like the first thing people notice. I always have this joke. I'm like, people must see me walking down the street with my kids and be like, huh, like they have brown skin and hair and eyes, and I'm very white. And like they must be like, huh, wonder what the dad looked like. And then if when their dad and I were together, I'd be like, and then he would show up, they'd be like, wasn't expecting that.
Yeah,
so
I love
think
that
is what I hope parents hear in that, is that like instead of pretending or trying to compensate for the differences, actually liberating your child and by saying it's going to be different. And then here are also some of the ways where we are the same. There are lots of both of those.
Oh, I love that. And it's like finding this balance of like, we are, you know, everybody's a human, but then humans are all different. Everybody has a unique genetic code, predisposition, circumstances, life events. And so there's just naturally so much diversity within humanity. But then of course, like we have this desire to like kind of go to the center of the average, because again, that like sense of survival, belonging. And I love that you highlighted the emotion of shame. I don't know if you could unpack that a little bit more for us, for parents that maybe are not familiar with really the innocence of shame, and how it's a signal. It's trying to send us a message, because all emotions send us information and messages for us to receive. Like, what does that, you know, that emotion signal to us, and how can we kind of befriend it as parents?
Oh, I love that question. I think there are so many things. First of all, that we as humans try to do to avoid shame, because it's such an uncomfortable feeling. And I think there's so much. I used to think I didn't want my kids to feel any shame whatsoever. And then I had this realization, I'm like, shame is an emotion and I feel so much of it, and yet none of it was safe. And I was like, wait a minute, what I actually want for my kids is when they do feel shame, because they will, like, Diana, you know what it's like to feel shame, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know what it's like to feel shame. And I think everybody listening knows what it's like to feel shame. And so our kids at some point in their life, we don't want to shame them, right? There's a distinction between shaming our kids and our kids feeling the emotion of shame. And so like, we wouldn't want to shame them. But if we can make that emotion, shame, a safe space where we're like, oh yeah, that's shame, sweetie. And we can start talking about it and being like, and normalizing it, that I know what that feeling feels like too, and bringing that safety to it. So when you start talking about shame, there's so many places I want to go. The first one is that what I've noticed for myself, and when I talk about shame, is that like what we oftentimes try to do is we're like, oh, if I'm perfect enough, do this perfectly, and it can be for us as parents, or it can be like, if my kids just do everything the same as their peers, AKA perfect, right? Then they won't have to feel shame. Then we won't have to feel shame. Right? But what it does, trying to be perfect, when we say, I want to be a perfect person, what we're actually saying to ourselves is, I want to focus on what everybody else needs, and I want to have no needs whatsoever. Does that make sense? I will have no needs, because a perfect person doesn't need anything from anybody else, right? The perfect person never makes a mistake, that, you know, like the perfect person, all these things, right? And if we don't have needs, our needs, our wants, our hopes, our desires, our emotions are what make us human. I'm going to have the perfect amount of emotion in each situation, right? And we can oftentimes, then what happens is we're trying to say, how do I have no needs? What ends up happening is, well, we're all human, so we all have needs. So when we have needs, we start to feel shame about those needs. And so like when we do something and you notice yourself starting to feel shame, maybe it's a need for belonging, that, oh, your emotions are valid. Like, I felt shame when I'm a deeply feeling adult. I feel all the time. And look, when my emotions come up, like, I'm like, oh, there's a portal into a feeling. And I'm like, I guess, you know, like I'm going to need to go there now and process what comes up. And I can, because I'm deeply feeling and very sensitive, it can take me time. And I'm like, oh, I need to create the space, the container for me to process that thing that maybe other people are just like, oh, nothing happened. Ha ha. And I'm like, oh, for me, that's like an hour of journaling for me to process what went on there for myself. And I used to judge myself for that. I used to shame myself for having those emotions. And so when I shifted into, oh, of course I have this need. So I see like the anecdotes of shame as being bringing approval to our needs that, oh, I, of course I have this emotion, to bring validation to it, to bring acknowledgement of it. Like, it, like we do try to pretend like it's not there. We try to cover it up or hide it.
Yeah, I think because and shame is like this emotion that hides.
Yes, it hides. And we think we can't talk about it. Ooh, can I share a story about shame?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so I was so shame-bound. And it gets internalized, right? Because if we think we're supposed to be the same as everybody else, yet we feel different, then we internalize shame. And so I had done that. And so for me, actually, and I'm actually sending out an email about this pretty soon. So this is kind of fun. So when I started Raising Your Strong-Willed Child 5 years ago, just about, I could not say my own name. I almost didn't run the series because when I tried to say Sonali, it came out slurred. It came out mumbled because I was so shame-bound. Because the moment I say my name, my ethnicity becomes apparent. And so and my belonging becomes something that I used to need to defend, or that I didn't have the skills to own who I was. So instead I tried to like my mumbled and jumbled my name. And so it was such a process of being able to actively work through that and learn and process that emotion, process those experiences, and then unwind from them, and then be able to say my name. And so that's one of the gifts that doing this work has actually allowed me to move through so much of the shame. And I think it's, and I think for parents as well, it's having a child that shows up differently in the world or that is more sensitive. Like we have these invitations, these portals into, oh, that's shame right there. Oh yeah, of course that's my shame because I believe that like they need to be the same, or I believe I need to be the same. I need to be the same as the other parents around me to be accepted or to belong, or to like that I need to fit in to belong. And I think fitting in and belonging are two different things. And so I think flipping that, oh, we don't need to fit in to belong.
Yeah, I love that. Exactly. We can be, it's almost like, it kind of reminds me of like attachment and autonomy being kind of these essential needs in early childhood and throughout life. And it's like, can I still be attached to the group and belong while also being an individual that has autonomy over my own life choices and be different in my expression of myself and who I am as a person? Can I be a gift to the group while still being part of the group? Right?
Exactly. Yes. Yes. Oh, I got chills when you said that, Diana. Exactly. that like, can I be part of this system, this group, and be myself and allow that to be a gift to the group?
Yeah.
And then others, and I can receive others' differences.
Yes.
And that's a gift to me.
Yeah. And it's a very kind of obviously like, you know, a human need, but also it's a very practical functioning of the world too, you know. Coming from a background in working with teams and leadership, like when we have a team that works well, it's not because everybody has the same skills. It's when everybody has different contributions. The links of the chain are what make the strength of the chain, right? So like, can you bring a skill set that nobody else has so you can cover our backs? You know, it's like, can the differentiation almost is the strength? Because it gives us unique perspectives and different creative ideas, and we can solve problems better. When one person doesn't think of it, somebody else does. And really, I really see it as a gift in a very practical way in humanity too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's seeing these things, like I think what you're saying is like, how can we then kind of move the outskirts of where our differences lie and what's considered acceptable and what's considered like, ooh, a bit more, I want to say like it threatens our norm a bit, or it challenges our norm a bit. And like finding those spaces and just extending them ever so gently. And I think it's like flipping these things that, like, I think there's a certain point where we start to view these differences as flaws. Ooh, right, that's where it is. And it's like, how can we change that? And how can we say, oh, this thing that looks like it may be a quote unquote flaw, maybe it's an asset. Like one of my flaws, I used to say this all the time to myself, and especially in grad school, I remember sitting and being like, it takes me three times as long to get half as much done as my peers. And what that's done, though, when I flip it, that's one of my greatest assets, because I have created ways to connect with your kids that are simple, that are doable, that are practical, that don't take a ton of time, because guess what? I don't have as much time. And so these things, I'm like, oh, if I were the same as everybody else, I'd be talking about the same things. But I have Insta connects and Insta diffusers and different things, because I'm like, look, I had to find those fast ways. I couldn't do it everybody else's way. And so I came up with a new way. So I hope that parents are like, oh, wait, this thing that I view as like, wait, this could be a negative. How do I work with it? Like, it could be their greatest gift.
It's almost like looking at it as a strength-based, you know, how they have like strength-based assessments and like strength-based focus. I mean, in business and leadership, they look at this. They're like, what are your strengths? We're not going to hire you for your opportunities or weaknesses, because you're not going to be the highest performer in that area, but you can be the highest performer in your strengths. And everybody has strengths. So what can you contribute?
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, how can you take those things that maybe you viewed as flaws?
Yeah.
Or as deficits, and how those, like, some of those might be, you may be viewing them as a deficit. I viewed mine. I'm like, everything that takes me so much longer. I view that as a deficit for so long. It's actually one of my greatest strengths, because of what I've been able to do with it. And I think for parents too, like those things that maybe, oftentimes the parents that I work with have kids that are sensitive both internally and externally. So they might be sound sensitive. And when that child feels safe with, like, they may, you know, for me, my son used to have like a 4-hour meltdown if I even played music when he was like 3 years old. And then as music and sound became safe, he is still sound sensitive to this day. What he is, though, because it became safe, is he's very sound attuned. He picks up, he's like, he has an incredible ear for music, for tone, for underlying energies, and he's very attuned to that. And it's one of his gifts. And absolutely, when we go, we're like, hey, look, let's go get a lot of places, let's figure out how we take care of ourselves. And we handle that. So I think those things, like, oh, I think in those spaces, when we can make those differences safe, they can be the portals into some of our greatest gifts.
Yeah, and I love that. And, you know, as we're talking, like, you know, mentioning that you're visually impaired, I wonder, you know, because that's one of the senses is sight. But then if that sense is minimized, then other senses work harder to compensate for that. So I wonder if you, the ability to work with parents and be so empathic and really see people for who they are, it has almost become, you know, this strength out of, it's almost like you can see people better because of your ability to tune into the voice, the sound of their voice, and the emotional exchange and the energy, just out of compensation for visual impairment. I don't know. Do you think that's true?
One of my favorite things to say is, like, when I'm explaining that I have albinism, I'm like, what that means is I have no pigment. What that makes me is clear.
So I love
instead
that.
Of white, I'm like, it makes me clear. I see people in ways they don't see themselves. It took me a long time to realize that that's what I was doing. Like, I responded to somebody's energy instead of the visual cues. And so, I don't think it's that, like, it's not like I'm born with these other senses. It's the just that I've trained myself
exactly
to leave for information. Yeah.
I love that. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of parents in the past about, like, kids with ADHD, for example. And while, like, maybe in this academic setting, it can be challenging to, you know, work on a big, huge project without breaking it down into chunks. But when the child is focused on something that they really are passionate about and they have ADHD, they're like a master of production. Like, if it's something that they love, they're like 10 times faster and better than somebody else that's average. at tackling the same activity. So again, like you're saying, it's like, let's reframe this as, and how can this be a strength in a situation? And if the environment isn't conducive to making it a valuable contribution or a strength, maybe we need to look at changing the environment. You know, what kind of support does your child need? And I'd love for you to dive into, like, how can we support our kids who feel different or who are different, feel like they don't fit in? Any other more practical kind of discussions on that?
Oh, I think the acknowledgement of it. So not trying, I think when we tell them, oh, you're the same as everybody else, we're trying to do that to soothe them or to settle them. And I think the message it tells them is, wait, that, like, inside there's that part of them that whispers that, but I feel different and that must be wrong. Uh-huh. So I think bringing the acknowledgement, hey, there are things about you that are different. And here are those things that are different. Like, oh, like if somebody would have said to me, yeah, it does take you longer to do something. And so that's something for you to be aware of. What is your capacity? And like, uh-huh. in a way that allows you to focus on, like, really drill down what's most important to you, Sonali. And So I think that acknowledgement of, oh, hey, yeah. They're like, do you sometimes feel like everybody else is excited about going to that birthday party and then you feel stressed? Yeah, that's understandable. And normalize that for them. Allow the belonging to be that we all know what it's like to feel differently from others. Be like, yeah, sometimes I feel that way too. Were you intending to say this and you actually blurted out this? Whoops, that happens to me too. You remember when that happened? So notice how in all of these, I'm like telling them, oh, this thing happened. We're not denying it. We're saying, hey, it happens to me too. Now, maybe not in the same way, but in different ways. Mm-hmm. And so I know what that's like and be like, oh, of course you want to be able to do that. When I was a kid, of course I wanted to be a doctor. I am so glad I'm not. I don't think, of course I would want to do that. So we can validate the desire. Maybe they do want to be able, like oftentimes I think our kids feel really conflicted.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. there is that part of them that wants to be able to go to that really noisy, loud birthday party like their peers. And there's also a part of them that already knows that they end up getting overwhelmed. And so bringing that acknowledgement to them about that conflict that they feel is like, do you like both want to go to that birthday party because your friends are going to be there and that's going to be fun? And you also want to like wish that there were a way that you could do that and it not start to hurt in your ears because of how loud it is? Yeah. And now that lays the foundation, but then you can have a conversation about how you can make that happen. What mm-hmm. kind of systems and tools do you want in place? First, acknowledge, I think, that conflict. Do you know what that conflict feels like, Diana?
Yes. And it reminds me of parts work, you know, internal family systems type work where you're like, it's different emotions happening at the same time and each one wants a turn.
Yep, exactly. You got it. I've had people say, oh, your work is like IFS. And I'm like, it's where I came to because I felt that conflict. I'm like, oh, why is it that I want to be able to go to the park? And I didn't have this awareness for so long. I'm like, I want to go to the park and have a good time. And then when I get home, why am I angry? And it was like, oh, I couldn't understand. And I'm like, oh, it's because it's hot. My body doesn't regulate heat. I live in Bangkok. And it's sunny. Again, my body doesn't regulate light. So by the time I get home, I'm physically drained.
Right.
And so instead, now I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to go to the park. And then when I get home, I close the curtains. I turn on the air conditioning. And I might take a nap or I just take quiet. And my kids and I have that system. And it has allowed them. I think some of the neatest things is when we bring our needs and our kids' needs together, when we give ourselves mm-hmm. permission to have needs. I would have shamed myself for that in the past. But when I do that, it's brought my kids to a space where they can have conversations and they can say, oh, I really love it when we do the water play outside, but I don't like the feel of the water on my face. So after, like, sometimes I'll dip in and dip out of the game because I know that, like, I've had enough. And it's given them that permission to have needs. And so our needs come together like this discovery of what your family system's needs are. And as well as the individuals in that family system, what their needs are.
I love it. Yeah, it's through that, you know, kids don't always listen to what we say, but they will eventually always do what we do. So if we can role model meeting our own needs, and it's just such a faster way to the passing on the values we want to teach instead of having to talk about them so much all the time, right?
Right, right. If we tell them, oh, part of me really wants to do this and part of me really wants to, like, part of me wants to be able to go out to eat after we've been shopping and do this other thing because it would be fun. And part of me just wants to go home, you know, and that's honest. I think kids that feel different really respond to honesty. I oftentimes say, like, there are these elusive energies in our heart sometimes. And we're like, okay, but how do I get there? I think one of them is trust. So what I'll say is, like, the pathway into trust is, like, the action to take is that honesty. And by being honest and speaking that and sharing that, acknowledging it, that pathway, that's what builds trust. So
I
it's
love
an elusive
it.
Word.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, vulnerability too, in a way, I guess. The trust of the courage to be vulnerable with what you're authentically experiencing. And then
yeah.
Of course, you have to have a safe environment to share it with, so that you don't feel betrayed or, you know, threatened by it. But yeah, if we can create more and more of that for our kids, they kind of learn their own, I guess it's their intuition, right?
Yeah. And what you said, Diana, that was so important, like the safe environment, like for our kids, because especially if you've got a kid who has, like, a diagnosis or a label, like allowing them to discover what are their safe spaces and knowing that they, like, allowing them to discover those safe spaces. I'll sometimes joke with parents. I'd be like, look, if I've had a rough day and the cashier at the grocery store is like, how are you doing? I'm not going to go and start, like, crying to them and telling them about my day. But if my bestie asked me that, I'm going to be like, can I have a seat on your couch? And I will start telling them about the things. And so, like, knowing where those safe spaces are, and that's an okay thing. I think sometimes we're like, oh, but my child shuts down in the situation. What if they're just responding to, they're like, wait a minute, I don't feel that safety here. So I'm going to withdraw a little bit. And that's me keeping myself safe. And what if that's what's happening? And so they're actually navigating where their safe spaces are and learning those safe spaces. And if we acknowledge that to them, like, hey, you know where you can share, and you know where, I notice you get a bit quiet, like you're attuned to, like, this is a time where I'd rather not share. And that's pretty cool that you're aware of that.
Yeah, I love that, and pointing that out for them. Ah, such good wisdom and, you know, perspective. And yeah, I know we could talk more about all of these topics. It's so good. I know we haven't gotten to some of the questions I had on here, but as we kind of wrap up, anything else you'd kind of want to wrap up with for the parents listening? And
I think the things that I would want to leave parents with is, your kids don't need to fit in to belong. Fitting in and belonging are two different things. That there are, like, they may not be able, and I think this is that really tough pill to swallow, because I think we want our kids so much to be the same as everybody else, as their peers, because we want them to have a good life, because we want them to belong. And just going back to, given who they are, how can they have that good life with who they are? Like that liberation of, yeah, this is who you are, and let's go have your good life. And no, you're not going to do everything the same as everybody else, and you deserve a good life, and you belong unconditionally. And so I think those are the messages that I want to leave for parents, and that, because this is the core of what I do, is your needs matter and your child matter. So I've got to throw that in.
And it's so hard to support our kids when we don't prioritize our own needs. So of course it's essential for us to meet our own needs if we want to support our kids, coming from the best parenting wisdom we've got for them. Yeah, would you share a little bit about where people can find out more about you? And we'll also link these below, but any other services and offerings you want to share with our audience?
Sure. You can find me at forwardtogetherparenting.com. That's my webpage, and my company name. And I have a Facebook group that's free, that's called Raising Your Strong Will Child. I also am on Instagram as at Raising Your Strong Will Child. And I have a Tackling Tech Troubles guide that actually does that whole bringing your needs and your child's needs together. And also because we started to talk about like the parts, like the conflict that they feel internally with themselves oftentimes with technology. Uh-huh. I know technology is one of those that we really struggle with. So what it is, I laid out three different situations, like when you've got the negotiator and when you've got the, you know, the child that wants more and more, or when the child that just doesn't hear you, and how do you navigate those situations? Bringing in consideration of mm-hmm, your needs mm-hmm. and their needs and holding them together. So that's also a bit.
Oh, that's going to be so powerful. I know I'm going to grab my copy. That's so good. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I really enjoyed our conversation. It was really valuable for our audience as well. So really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you, Diana. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you to everybody for listening.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like additional resources to support you in your parenting journey, my free gift to you is access to my parenting membership with a free 30-day trial where you'll find bite-sized video and audio strategies, scripts, masterclasses, a private community with parents just like you, and weekly group coaching calls directly with me, and so much more. Go to delightinparenting.com/membership to learn more.